of the premises that we were going to use, or rules, I guess you could say, for looking at these parables? Being a misapplication of what the parable was intended for, because it was intended to show that we all need to be prepared and not had nothing to do with sharing at all. What else? Okay, well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you, we've been looking the past several weeks at what you would call the Kingdom of Heaven parables, and we're going to look at one of those this morning as well. What would you be able to say about the Kingdom of Heaven that you've learned from the parables that we've looked at so far? And kind of to refresh your memory, we've looked at the parable of the sower, the parable of the tares, we've looked at the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, the one that Susie brought up. We've looked at the parable of the net, the dragnet is the topic in my Bible, which is called. We've looked at the parable of the mustard seed. We've looked at the parable of, those are the main parables that we looked at. What would you be able to say about the Kingdom of Heaven based on those parables? Or what sticks out in your mind as things that we've learned of what we said about those particular parables?
One that comes to my mind, not one that you mentioned, but I think we looked at the parable of the treasure, the lost.
Yes,
right. Lost,
I knew I'd leave one out. right.
It's without value. I mean, not without value. Everything else that we might have, mm-hmm. give all of that up in order to mm-hmm. obtain great value.
Yeah.
Probably the most valuable thing you could obtain mm-hmm. or ever have.
Okay.
Be a part of the kingdom.
Good. Anybody else? I guess the things that have stood out in my own mind from having studied most of these parables and looked at them myself is, and I guess it goes back to the parable of the sower, and that is, well, and also to the definition of what the Kingdom of Heaven is, because just about every commentary that I read when it was looking at the Kingdom of Heaven, they always said that the Kingdom of Heaven was the church. Every commentator, and I didn't look at a lot of modern ones, but these were mostly scholars from back in the earlier part of this century. But they all said that it was the church, and they rested their complete arguments for the parables upon the church, and that only being the church. But we spent one week in looking at how, and I think this is what Jesus was talking about, is that the Kingdom of Heaven involves the church, and definitely the church is a part, but it is not the main thing that the Kingdom of Heaven is about, because the Kingdom of Heaven is the individual rule of God within the heart of an individual. It's not a church. It's not a group of people. The church is a group of people who have that individual rule, for sure. But it really is And there are some parables which you could read them and say, well, yeah, it sounds like he's talking about the church, and he may have been talking about the group of people. But still, the basis for the kingdom of heaven is the individual, is that mystery that Paul talks about of Christ in you, which he was mainly talking about with the Gentiles there. But it's that mystery, it's that rule of God in your own heart. And I think when you take that and you look at that with that particular eye at the parables, that it lends a somewhat of a more personal application for the things that you learn from looking at the parables. And that's the thing. And the thing that I got from the parable of the sower, I mean, I've always focused on the grounds, you know. The hard ground, the good ground, the thorny ground, you know, the path, the rocky ground. And he talks about four different soils there. But really, the whole point of the kingdom of heaven, another misapplication of that is you could say, well, everybody's predestined. We talked about that. Everybody's predestined to be one of those soils. If you're rocky soil, you can't turn into good soil. That's a misapplication of that parable. The thing about the kingdom of heaven from the parable of the sower, it shows to me what God's part is, and that is that God is the sower, and he throws the seed everywhere. And he even throws the seed on rocky soil where there's very good opportunity that that's not going to be productive wheat, which comes from that rocky soil. But God has done his part in that he has made his word available to everyone. And then you have to go to other parables to look at the application to the individual lives, I think. The tares being one of those as a good example. So for me personally, that's probably one of the big applications that I came away with. Let's look at Matthew chapter 18, starting with verse 21. He says, "Then Peter came and said to him, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?' And Jesus said to him, 'I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wishes to go settle accounts with his slaves. When he had begun to settle them, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. But since he did not have the means to repay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, along with his wife and children, and all that he had, and repayment had to be made. So the slave fell to the ground and prostrated himself before him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you everything." The Lord of that slave felt compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. But that slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii, and he seized him and began to choke him, saying, "Pay back what you owe." So his fellow slave fell to the ground and began to plead with him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you." But he was unwilling and went and threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed. So when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to their Lord all that had happened. And summoning him, his Lord said to him, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. You should have also had mercy on your fellow slave in the same way that I had mercy on you." And his Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay all that was owed him. My heavenly Father will also do the same to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart." Okay, what's the central theme of this parable? What's the central truth of what Jesus is trying to get across to his disciples here? Okay.
How critical it is that we've been, God has been merciful with us, and which is central. Mm-hmm. That's the forward.
Right. Okay.
I was just in a meeting a couple of days ago with my
she didn't want to hear it.
It's so simple, but, you know, it's like, why beat yourself up when there's a mistake? I mean, you try not to repeat them. Go on, but go on and glide, you know. Forgive. Forgive the person who made a mistake, or forgive yourself, you know. Go on. Why? Why be miserable?
Right.
And I think
right.
Jesus gives us a key to happiness here is forgiveness.
Say that again.
We do that. You know, God gives us forgiveness, and there's an expectation that we'll forgive. There's jeopardy in this example that I guess the question would be with how well do you have it if you can't? How well do you understand forgiveness if you can't really give it and provide it?
Right.
It's something that you're given that you give away.
You know, this is a parable, one of the parables, we think, at least I've always thought when I've looked at the parables, that here's Jesus teaching the individual parables to gigantic multitudes of people. I think this particular parable was one that was obviously directed at the 12, because they're the ones who came to him, because Peter came to him and said, so this appeared to me to be more like individual teaching to the 12. Now, I don't know, there may have been other people present. There are other disciples as well. But it was not one that he gave, like all the ones that we looked at, the parable of the sower, at the Sea of Galilee, with multitudes gathered around. This was not one of those. And he was direct in this, because, and it's amazing to me, because he says, he told the disciples after the parable of the sower, that I teach to these people in parables so they can understand. But to you has been given to know the mysteries, almost indicating, if you took Jesus' line of thought or tried to take his line of thought, that he was saying, you shouldn't need to have parables to make you understand. But yet here he is, giving another parable to his apostles, to his disciples, because they did not understand. And how do we know they didn't understand? They didn't understand basically because of the question that they asked. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I've done some teaching in my company of some things based on quality and statistical process control, they call it. Basically, it's looking at statistics. And sometimes I'm up there and I'm basically training operators who do not have the education of statistics and things like that. And so I'm up there and I'm telling them different things. And then all of a sudden, one of them will raise his hand and ask a question. And from the question, it's very obvious that not a one of them has gotten it. And it's probably my fault because I didn't make it simple enough for them to understand. So then I have to back up, and I have to go back, and I have to start explaining it in much simpler terms so that they can understand what I'm talking about how that you look at statistics to determine how well you're making your manufacturing process is making your quality, is making your product, and that you have good quality product. So when I go back and I use simpler terms, they go, oh, yeah, now we see what you're talking about. So I almost get the impression that this is exactly what Jesus was doing here, was he was saying, yeah, it's been given to you, you know, the mysteries, but man, you're not there yet. You know, you're not where you should be. I'm not sure of that myself. Anybody know? Seven is a number that's in the Bible as a number of completeness, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking he was going to be kind of going beyond what maybe the normal Jewish...
Steve?
I can't help you on the Old Testament question, but I was just flipping over in Luke. And there's a passage like this one that comes after some teaching about beware of crossing the stumbling block. And then after that is a passage where Jesus says, be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you seven times a day and returns to you seven times saying, I repent, forgive him. So that was something Jesus said. I don't know if this is an account of the same teaching or another teaching. And Peter was seven times, right? I just want to make sure I got it right for seven. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a good point, Steve. Yeah.
Well, I think the number seven is a very significant number. You know, there's a lot of examples of seven being used. Mm-hmm. Seven was used in a lot of their ceremonies. The earth was created in 7 days.
Right.
6 days. God rested on the seventh day. I think it represents a very, very significant, very, very large, all-encompassing. It's like, forgive the guy as many times as they need, but then, like she said, he takes it one step farther and he goes, do this way more than you can imagine possible, you know?
Right.
You know, if it's 1,000 times, forgive him 1,000 times. If it's 1,000,000 times, forgive him 1,000,000 times. Forgive him whatever it takes.
I think what God is dealing with here in the hearts of the apostles at this particular time, as well as in my own heart, is that they have this pharisaical approach to what the law says. And that's basically what the Old Testament was. And Jesus has really already addressed this over in Matthew chapter 5. And he says, verse 33, and again you have heard that the ancients told you, the ancients, is the way my translation translates that from the Greek, the people from a long time ago, the ancients told you, you shall not make false vows. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place, but that was a good point anyway. It's on further down. In verse 38, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Same ancients gave them that one as well. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat as well. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. And that give also includes forgiveness, at least according to what Jesus was saying there. So there's this mentality developed by the law and the Pharisees and the Sadducees of you do everything by the book. You know, if it's the law, you do it this way. You don't have to go any further than that. But you do have to fulfill the law. And so therefore, the law says, and again, I think Jeff made this point last week when he was talking about the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, didn't he? Of that's not what God intended for that to be. It was not what he intended it to be. He did not intend it to be tit for tat. You do this to me, I do that for you. It was intended to protect people. But he put it in those simple terms so that the Israelites would understand it. But they took it so far as to say, I can only forgive you so many times. And after that so many times, I don't have to do it anymore because I fulfilled the law. And you just obviously have this obsession and you have this problem with sinning against me, and so therefore I don't have to give you. There's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth for that. So I think that's what Jesus is dealing with here. And isn't it human nature? I mean, it's human nature with me, is that I say, well, how many times has this guy done this to me before? I mean, if you've had a problem with that, I have. This guy just keeps doing the same thing to me, and even if he comes and asks me for forgiveness, I'll give it to him, but he keeps doing it, and he keeps doing it. Now, is that the right attitude I'm supposed to have? Well, I'm not going to forgive him anymore. I'm just going to write him off. Is that the right attitude?
I think our tendency is to, I'll forgive you, but I'm going to write it down in my memory log somewhere, and there's going to be a point that I've had enough. You know, and I think this parable also addresses that issue. Mm-hmm. The 70-time session is like, well, if it's 7 times, whether that figure is representative of 100 or 1,000, well, check, check, check. Oh, I'm down to the last one here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's done all this again and again. I'm not going to put up with it. But the idea of forgive and totally forget it. I can't help but think about children. You know, they can be incredibly annoying. And you know, you forgive them over and over again. And as the years go by, you think back on what these children were like, and it was a real joy because you don't remember, you just flat don't remember
Right.
The fact that, oh yeah, he does care about other kids. He does, you know, he is considered. He does put his toys away. He's done some things that we would remember. And then we need to do that with the people that we're with, like our
right.
neighbors, the people we work with, best friends, our worst enemies.
Right.
We just got to get it.
Just like that analogy with children, they grow in that process. And actually, if someone is doing the same thing against you over and over, there's a problem there somewhere that needs to be addressed in some way. Help them out.
Right,
encouraged,
right.
whatever. Because you shouldn't be doing the same thing against somebody else.
Yeah.
70 times 7.
Yeah.
You know, there should be a growth process somewhere. And, you know, so maybe that person needs extra attention.
Yeah, I think two things. One, we emphasize I'm forgiving, I'm granting it. Two, nine, 23. When you're into the hundreds, the thousands, then I think the question is, I know what they would be, a sense of self, personal self-respect or self, personal self-identity, like, that could be because I'm misunderstanding what forgiveness I'm granting is, you know, and I think that maybe goes back to this point of remembering what you've got. That's hard, you know. I think we have a society that really does identify with a personal self-esteem kind of independence, yada yada, and at some point you have this struggle, I do, of, okay, this is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another point I want to make is let's give the apostles a little break here as well, because in reality, I still don't think they understood what the Messiah was going to do. I mean, all the way up until right when Jesus was betrayed, they were asking, are you going to establish the kingdom now? You know, thinking about a worldly, earthly kingdom. So in reality, I think this is a process of teaching that Jesus is kind of bringing them into line with saying, you know, you were doing things this way. You don't understand that I'm going to die for the sins of all the world. You don't really understand what the Messiah is going to do. And look at what happened after they did understand that, right after in Acts, right after Jesus had ascended and they were at Pentecost and the Spirit came on them. Look at the change in Peter. And I think he understood those mysteries. Those mysteries were completely revealed to him at that time. But they were still operating under the old Pharisaical law. And so therefore they didn't understand what we understand today at this particular point, that Jesus was dying for their sins. And so I think when you put it in that light, he's correcting some things that were wrong in the old system, but it hadn't been fulfilled at that particular time simply because he had not died on the cross and he had not become the sacrifice and he had not taken the sins of all the world on his shoulders. So, Susie, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say right before this, back in verse 15, talking about if your brother sins against you, go to him. I think there's kind of a difference here between sin in the life of a brother that you need to go and confront and then forgiveness in your own heart. Because there are other places where it talks about harboring grudges and resentments gives the devil a foothold.
Right.
Gives opportunities. The devil gives a toehold in your life. So, you know, I think just above here we talked about sin that needs confronting, and now he's talking about forgiveness in your attitude, your heart.
Good.
So Ron. According to the law, this wicked servant in this parable had every right to do what he did.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So, you know, Jesus is taking their mindset and just flipping it, and, you know, turning it topsy-turvy there, having to come at it from a whole new perspective.
Yeah.
It's just not human nature.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember that this unmerciful servant or slave did not physically lay hands on this man and do any harm. He turned him over to other authorities. So definitely within the confines of the parable, the master had the right to throw the slave in jail as well as sell him, like he said, and all of his wife and children as well. And this particular servant or slave had rights as well, so he had the right to hand him over to the jailer to put him in jail until he paid the debt. So they were all within the law, but the difference was. One thing I want to notice here is the difference in the magnitudes of the debt. I mean, I don't know for sure how much 10,000 talents works out to be, but it's a tremendous sum. It's probably a lifetime salary for a person back in this particular time. It's an amazing sum. It's something that could never be repaid by. And the fact that he said, "Lord, please be patient with me, and I will repay it," is almost, you could almost picture the master almost laughing, because he couldn't work a lifetime and repay this debt, and yet the master forgave him. And then the smallness of the debt that the other slave owed him was a denarii was almost talking like pocket change today. I mean, it was so small that, you know, you could probably it would probably translate to something like $10 or $20 today, something like that. So the magnitudes of those two things just really make the effect of this parable even greater, and that is that we owe so much more to our God and to our Savior than we ever owe to one another. And that's one of the things that struck me as well.
In light of that, and the comment that was made earlier about justice, the servant had the right to do it, maybe this is a way of showing that the law, the old law, which revealed justice, the servant had the right. It didn't reveal mercy, didn't show you mercy yet.
Right.
You know, that, okay, you had the right, you didn't understand mercy, you understood justice. You know, and then out of that example shows they're not the same. You know, even though you had the right to, you didn't learn the lesson of mercy.
Do you think that we learn the lesson of mercy today? Do you think that we've had the lesson of mercy taught to us today? And is it something that we have to learn?
A lot. Yeah. Somebody mentioned our individual society and our individualistic society. And I think, again, the contrast to our culture and our society, where we have our right, you know, and we need to protect ourselves against people infringing upon us or taking advantage of us.
I think it's kind of like Dan said. I think that mercy is something that we learn, and depending upon how we're raised, some of us learn it pretty well, and some of us don't. I think sometimes we, I don't know for why, but sometimes some of us are more attuned to mercy than maybe other ones of us. I don't know why that is necessarily. I don't know if it's background or what. But I think that Jesus is teaching mercy here. Yeah.
I think it's how merciful we are depends on how much we understand, how much we believe that God has been merciful to us. If you have been forgiven much, we'll forgive.
Right.
And if you understand just how much God has forgiven you, then for myself, that gives me the humility to be able to forgive someone. Aware of
who
I am and what my place is in the kingdom.
Good. One other point that I wanted to make about this was that the consequences of this debt was tremendous to this man. I'm talking about the man who owed the tremendous debt to the master. And that was that not only was he to be sold, and by being sold, that meant that from a personal standpoint, his family was going to be broken up as well. I mean, and being sold, there was no way, I mean, he would be serving another master at that particular point. There's no way that he could make money to repay this debt if he wanted to try to repay it. In addition to that he would have his wife and all of his kids probably sold to different individuals, because it was very unusual for someone to go and buy a slave and buy the whole family at once. Sometimes some people would do it out of mercy for that, but sometimes they would sell the father, they would sell the mother separately, and they'd sell all the kids separately. So it was really drastic, drastic consequences for something like this. And again, the mercy was shown by the master, whereas the slave showed no mercy to the other slave and was going to have him thrown into jail. And it's amazing to me that they throw him into jail until they could pay the debt. And did they get paid to go into jail? No, they didn't get paid to go into jail. So they would just sit there until somebody either came to their rescue and paid their debt, or they died, basically. So it was more or less a life sentence. Yeah.
Wasn't it a tradition at the time that if you were thrown in jail, it was people that you knew had to come and give you food and give you things that you actually needed so that you could survive?
Many of the jails were like that, yes.
Like, jail isn't like it is now, where you go to jail and the government.
And you got computers, and you got all kinds of things there. Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Okay, so this whole parable is about forgiveness and about mercy. I think really there's two major truths behind this, and that is the extremes that our Father will go to us to forgive us if we show the heart that's desiring forgiveness, and that is to just completely wipe things out. He forgave him the debt. He didn't tell him, yes, you can go ahead and start trying to repay it. He wiped it out. And then the other truth is that we should look at our own master's example to us in our forgiveness and do the same with one another. And, you know, then we would be a true brotherhood, a true church, I think. Okay, anybody have any closing comments? Okay, thank you.